numbers told the story they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. However you take it as in, we appreciate it. It's Gil Alexander. It is Wyatt Tomchek in for Kelly Bidlin, live from Bar Canada here at the D, downtown Las Vegas, proudly brought to you by DraftKings. What's happening? Are you staring me down?
I was waiting.
Oh, okay.
I'm entrenched on what you're saying.
Oh, that's just riveting what I had to say. Still to come this hour, by the way, Wyatt, Paul Carr on the Euros, Euro Cup 2024, and Paul Spohr on a whole bunch of season-long baseball thoughts that he has as we approach the All-Star break. We're about 2.5 weeks, almost 3 weeks, somewhere in that pocket away from the All-Star break. So it's the end of not next week, but the end of the following week begins the All-Star break. Let's clean up some stuff from previous segments. One, you had you have that fact that I think Will McDonough laid out. Or was it Will McDonough who said it? Not Will McDonough, pardon me. Sean McDonough.
Yeah.
His son, Sean McDonough, said it on the broadcast last night. By the way, Sean McDonough, very emotional at the end of the broadcast yesterday.
I liked it. You know, it's the end of the season. It's the first championship for the Panthers. Obviously, it's a momentous occasion. I like the emotion in a broadcaster.
But he had been sick earlier in the series.
Yes, I think it was either game 3 or game 4. You can clearly tell. People
yeah.
are like, man, this guy's like no energy.
I'm
like,
well, people were giving him some incoming, and I felt it from him.
Well, so Sean McDonough is one of those that he's a very high energy.
Yeah.
And I always love listening to him call games. So for people to think that he has no energy, nah.
He said, made this 62-year-old's dream come true doing that series. But where are we going with that? Oh, you had a fact that he said.
It was a funny thing. So Evan Rodriguez off the Florida Panthers, who scored, I think he had the most goals for the Panthers that series. I might have to double check on that. But he's the first Evan in Stanley Cup history.
I heard him say that.
It'll be the first Evan on the Stanley Cup trophy.
Such a random fact, like, first of all, that someone knew that. I wonder if there's a Wyatt that's ever won a Stanley Cup.
I was trying to look. Wyatt Johnson, you know, he's been a heck of a player. I don't want to see the Dallas Stars win it. Maybe he can go to the Golden Knights or the Detroit Red Wings. But, I want to know who the person was that was scrolling through the Stanley Cup to find Evan.
Jeff Staples on Twitter. He says, can't you just hear Emily Kaplan asking one of her fellow Conn Smythe voters, you just voted for Connor McDavid. How does that make you feel? That's such a great tweet. Emily Kaplan's post-game interviews, not always insightful, is what I think Jeff Staples is getting at right there. So I want to clean up some stuff. Drew, he rifled through, literally, I'll count them for you, like close to 20 swimming bets for the Olympics. Drew did. And I know they were super fast. I know it was impossible to get all of them. He did text them to us, and he had them under the category of likely, meaning 90% or greater than 90%, could happen, maybe, small shot, no chance from an American standpoint. I'll just give you the likelies, the ones that are above 90%, he says, to happening. Katie Ledecky in the women's 1500 free, Gretchen Walsh in the women's 100 fly, and then both are women's and men's 4x100 medleys. That's what MED stands for. So those are the four that he says are likely to happen from an American standpoint in swimming. The other thing before we get to tennis, College World Series, congratulations to everybody who had Tennessee to win the College World Series. They were the short shot. They were the number one overall seed. They are the first overall number one seed to win the College World Series in 25 years. Since the 1999 Miami Hurricanes. So congratulations to all. That was going on at the same time as the hockey game was going on. So you had one eye on hockey. Maybe you had one and a half eyes on hockey. But the baseball game was going on. It was 3-1 Tennessee. Then it was 6-1. But then a rally from A&M got it 6-3. And then you may have missed this, and Todd Wright was texting me about this. Texas A&M got it to 6-5. That was the eventual final score of this. And Todd Wright was pointing out the total was 10.5. And for those and at the Hard Rock, at least where he lives in Florida, they offered a run line on Tennessee at -1.5. And he said the final sequence of this, where the overcashed and the run line on Tennessee anyway failed, he said the Tennessee pitcher single-handedly, he says, giving A&M a fifth run with two outs in the ninth. The runner on first went to second without being held on the first pitch. Then he balked him to third before throwing the next pitch by attempting to throw to first where no one was, and then sent him home on an 0-2 wild pitch to the backstop. That made it 6-5 with nobody on base, and he struck out the final batter on the next pitch. He said he flipped both single-handedly with two outs in the ninth. He said that the strange throw, like fake to first or he throw to first, whatever it was, he says, like even his teammates, according to Todd Wright, were like, what is he doing? So it was a very interesting ending to that game.
Where was the guy? Was the guy
was on third, according to Todd. I didn't see the final sequence, but that is, so it was like shenanigans, weird
what's,
stuff happening at the end of that
game. What's the old thing on Major League? Just a bit outside on that throw.
So, you know, I don't know if he threw it or he faked it. Nothing happened on that, but then he wild pitched, on the wild pitch he went in. But it was just a bizarro ending. But congratulations again to Tennessee, and those who had Tennessee will always wonder what would have happened if that was not ruled a check swing against FSU. I will just say that in conclusion. Okay, tennis. Yesterday, in case you missed it, we're doing Drew, by the way, said yes to that question at the end of his segment, but his mic was cut off. We're doing a podcast on Thursday. Zach Cohen should be joining us as well. I should probably let Zach know that it's going to be Thursday at 9:30. So we're doing a Wimbledon podcast. Grass, as I was talking about yesterday, it's the shortest of all the tennis surface seasons, right? Hard court is the most data because you're playing it early in the calendar year. You're playing it late in the calendar year. So it's the most robust. It also happens to be the best surface for me, and there's no secret to why that is, because the data is the most robust. Clay, fairly good as well. Grass is 5 weeks a year, man. There just isn't. Man, I call you, man. Five is just 5 weeks of grass, and it's there's not as much to say about it. The draw, less important than on other surfaces and slams, also because you just don't know as much. But that doesn't mean you still can't go into the raw data of serve percentage and return percentage. And I was mentioning when I did the men's side yesterday that, yes, the big headline is Djokovic. We don't know if Djokovic is playing yet or not. We still haven't determined that. Sinner and Alcaraz, are they second and third best, Djokovic fourth best, when it comes to raw one-year grass numbers? 1 year, we're talking like weeks, right? It's not really a year of tennis. We're just talking about a small sample size of weeks. But the one person who has better grass numbers than those great players, Sinner, Alcaraz, Sinner, Alcaraz, Djokovic, Grigor Dimitrov, I mentioned, right? So Grigor Dimitrov, I said, if you were interested in a flyer on the men's side, Dimitrov at 20-1, not knowing the draw, right? Dimitrov is what? He's 40-1? 40-1, pardon me, not knowing the draw. If you took a flyer on him, hoping that he would get deep into it, then you could earn on that. That would not be something I would hate because of his raw numbers. And then the long shots are the serve bots, other long shots. Matteo Berrettini, 22-1. He has good grass numbers. Historically, he has pretty solid grass numbers, very good. He's gone deep in this tournament once or twice. And then Milos Raonic is the real long shot, 100-1, because he's a serve bot. And if he just serves you after you know, match after match, if he just gets on a streak, then he could go deep. But those are all long shots, and those would be the ones that I would sort of endorse taking a flyer on, hoping one of them gets deep because of their raw numbers and because of their serve prowess in the case of the last two. Women's side, I did the numbers yesterday, and we always talk about the world number one, Iga Świątek, and how I believe she's going to be the greatest of all time when all is said and done. And much of that will be because she won a ton of tournaments, a ton of French Opens specifically on clay, because she is Rafa Nadal. She's the female Rafa Nadal on that surface. Well, when I went through the grass numbers, again, these are one-year grass numbers. They are not nearly as robust. I'm not suggesting they are as the other surfaces, hard court and all its gradations, or clay and all its gradations. But guess who's got the best data for the last year in grass? Iga Świątek, which was a bit of a surprise to me, I have to tell you. It's about 2 points. When I'm aggregating the numbers of serve and return serve, and essentially the way that I do it is, if you're at 100, you're an average tennis player, if you add those two things together. If you're below 100, you're below average on that service. You're above 100, you're better than average. And if you get to like 110, which the Djokovic's of the world do on multiple services, and Iga does now on multiple services, Iga's 113.6 on grass, just to give you a number to it. The other, Sabalenka and Rybakina, are at 108s again, it's a very small sample size, right? It's only weeks worth of grass tennis. So we're talking, you know, matches that you can count easily. But Iga still has the best numbers. And so, Wyatt, I bet Iga at 4-1. I was mentioning this when Zach was on the other day. I bet her at 4-1 to win this. And I like it at the French Open. And finally, the Alcaraz-Swiatek parlay hit, as you recall, in the French Open at plus 450, we hit that. I actually parlayed her with only two players, with Sinner and with Alcaraz. And we show those are actually really good numbers because Iga's not the short shot, right? Alcaraz, Swiatek pays 7-1. Sinner, Swiatek pays plus 850 on this. So those are my Wimbledon bets to this moment. I did not play the long shots that I was just talking about. I'm just saying I could see why one would on Dimitrov, on Raonic, or on Berrettini. On the ladies' side, in between Swiatek and Sabalenka and Rybakina, Madison Keys, who has been to one slam final. Remember when she lost to Sloane Stephens back in the day in the U.S. Open? She's at 110. Jesse Pegula. Sneaky, freaky brother sneaking in from the rear. Jesse Pegula, 109.4. And she is an interesting case as well. So I think there's a couple American players here at Wimbledon that are kind of live. And as far as like the sort of, hey, if you must take a long shot, they're actually two interesting candidates. I know a lot of people are going to talk about Coco and Naomi Osaka. I actually don't see it. Anjabur at 13-1 is a better play than those two, in my opinion. Jesse Pegula is 22-1, and we don't even see Madison Keys on the board. Is she in this tournament? I believe she is. But let's see where she ends up in the draw. These are all pre-draw thoughts. But in terms of raw data, those are the names that I would just sort of throw out there. But my bets, again, Iga to win it, and then Iga Sinner and Iga Alcaraz in terms of the parlays. We'll come back. Paul Carr, big day in soccer. He's got a bunch of picks. Euro 2024 on the other side. Numbers Game. Visa, the Sports Betting Network. So let's see. We've talked Tour de France, swimming, tennis, College World Series, hockey on the show today. When's football coming? How about Thursday? 2 days from now. Our NFL betting guide drops on Thursday. There's never been a better time to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. Our all-new NFL betting guide, your secret weapon for the upcoming season, with in-depth profiles of every team, advanced stats, proven betting systems, and betting trends. You have all the tools you need to bet this season smarter. Plus, our experts share their top bets on season win totals, futures, and props, giving you the insights you need to get ahead of the action. To get the guide, you got to be a VSiN Pro subscriber, though, for a limited time. Get an annual subscription to VSiN Pro at an unbeatable price. Normally, $240 a year. You can subscribe now for just $199 with promo code ANG. Plus, we'll throw in an extra month for free. That's 13 months. I did the math. Of VSiN Pro access to everything we do, including our daily best bets, 24/7 video, premium analysis, exclusive betting splits data, and all our special edition betting guides. Keep you betting smarter all year long. Don't miss out, though, on our all-new NFL betting guide. And this incredible offer, visit VSiN.com/subscribe right now and use promo code ANG.
ANG, the three best letters in the alphabet.
I think so. You get 13 months of VSiN Pro for just $199. Reserve your copy of our all-new NFL betting guide. That's VSIN.com/subscribe.
Although none of them are in my name, so.
None in your name?
Nope.
Oh, okay.
Maybe we'll have to revisit that one.
By the way, a couple things. One, also, we went back and I let you know the four likely swimming plays that Drew had, just in case rapid fire passed you by and you were interested in those. Also, the cyclist, again, for the Tour de France that he mentioned, which I know people are hanging on for. His name, again, Tadej Pogačar. His name is spelled P-O-G-A-C-A-R. Pogačar, for those who missed that. By the way, VSiN.com/picks, we have every host, every guest, every sport, every pick is there for subscribers at VSiN.com/picks. I had two tennis picks heading into today. Sebastian Offner over Dardari. He is up a set, and he is serving for the match right now, up 5-4 in the second. What could go wrong? But we have one more today, in case you're interested, and that is on Katerina Siniakova. Or is it Siniakova, I believe. She's been playing in Hamburg, Bad Hamburg. against Ludmila Samsonova. She is a plus 115 dog on the website. Again, for subscribers last night, I got her at plus 126. I would still play her at plus 115. I would not let it get below plus 110. So Siniakova, Katerina Siniakova, the only remaining play in tennis today. Which brings us to soccer. Courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line, it's our buddy Paul Carr who joins us on Twitter at Paul Carr, C-A-R-R is where you can find him. He, of course, is the host of the Expected Value podcast and works at True Media Networks. He is a hard-working man. He's the hardest-working man in showbiz. Paul, explain to the people, I don't know why I got Cosby there all of a sudden, but explain to the people what you do. Like, what are you in the midst of working on?
Yeah, this is probably my busiest month of the year. We, True Media, I and my guy Steve and Blake do game notes for Fox for the major tournaments. So World Cups, in this case, they have Copa and Euros. So we're writing 4 to 6 pages of notes for all 83 games that they have in these tournaments over this month. So we are just past the halfway point. I think 48 out of 83 down.
Jeez. Wow. And yeah, that is,
it's a lot.
How long does one take to do?
The first ones are always the longest because you're assembling everything for the first time. Once you get going, I mean, it's 2 to 4 hours for one, you know, a lot of it's just updating, but then you also, you know, look at the last game, find some trends. This guy's hurt. What does that mean? Trying to stay up on those sorts of things. So yeah. And there's a big prep process of, you know, we can do head to heads for the group matchups in advance because we know what those matchups are 6 months out, things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's a lot. It's just so many, you know, a lot of these teams you can do off the top of your head, just about.
Yeah.
Obviously your US's, your England's, your Germany's, but you know, you get down on the Georgia's, like, can't say I know a lot about Georgia outside of their couple of key players and things like that.
Well, you
so
know,
it's a lot of prep work, so it makes it easier during the tournament.
It's funny you bring up Georgia. Kelly and I had the screens on at the end of one of our numbers game shows, and Turkey was playing Georgia, and we could identify the Turkey flag, and then I somehow pulled Georgia, but I was like, we couldn't recognize it immediately, the Georgian flag.
Right.
Okay, well, it's not mining coal. It's a labor of love. People should know he's not complaining. It's just I just wanted to point out how hardworking he is. And Offner, of course, gets broken with a chance to win the match. Just want to point that out as it's happening. What could go wrong? Well, that went wrong. Okay, big day today. First of all of your pre-flop bets are still active, every one of them?
I think so. I mean, I got, let's see, Poland last in the group has cashed. Hungary could still advance as a third-place team. Slovenia could advance today. France, Austria, dual forecast is in play. Germany title. And I will insist that the Lukaku golden boot is still in play.
Oh, he will.
He hasn't scored yet.
He will insist. All right. Insist away. All right. And then the other.
Because the leader only has 2 goals so far. So I don't know if he's going to play in their next. Oh, he'll play in their next game because they need a result at least. So if he gets a couple there, he's right there. And then he's got 1, maybe 2, 3 knockout games. So who knows?
Okay. And before we get to your picks then, explain to us. Like, this is the quirky part, right? So you don't have a play in this game, I don't believe. But Slovakia-Romania is an example of a game where they both advance with a draw, you were saying.
Yeah, this is a bad format. 24-team tournaments where some of the third-place teams advance because Slovakia-Romania, for example, play later after some groups already done. So they have more information about what they need to do. So we know both of them will advance if they draw today. And so the draw price is around even money right now, which is, you know, you almost never see anything below plus 200 in, you know, normal situations. So it's even money. This happened a couple years ago or 3 years ago at Euros also, where it was about this and Austria ended up winning. But by that point, Ukraine knew a 1-goal loss was fine and they just kind of putzed it around, which, you know, could happen here. But it's just wild to see some of these prices because teams know what they need to do or don't need to do in some situations. So yeah, I'm not saying go play it, but it's just absurd to look at the odds like, and you think that like your screen's broken or whatever because you're seeing even money on a draw.
It's amazing for this specific kind of format. Obviously, right. Motivations abound here for different teams that are already in. Some teams are already out. And then we have England and Slovenia today. England has not looked great, but they're through, right?
Correct. They have advanced. We don't know in what position they'll advance. They want to win the group to get the most favorable round of 16 draw. So they're through, but we don't know where yet.
What are you doing with this match with England and Slovenia, our second Slovenia reference of the segment?
Right. So I'll start. I got a couple plays on this. One, I like the draw. I played this at plus 400, and I saw some plus 450s this morning. So bad job by me getting a good price on that. Here's the thing. England hasn't looked good. They're a low-scoring team. Slovenia needs a draw to advance. So, yeah, they're going to be motivated, obviously, in that sense. England is through. They would like to win in all likelihood, in order to win the group, it depends on the Denmark-Serbia game as well. But England's just been so dire offensively, which makes no sense given all the attacking talent that they have. And their last five Euro games have all been low scoring, two goals or fewer. So they're not going to blow Slovenia out, I don't think. And Slovenia is likely not going to open up because even a one goal loss could get them through. So everyone's going to try to keep this tight. So I like the draw at plus 400 or plus 450. You can get even better.
And you're also taking the under then.
Yeah, same sort of reasoning. England doesn't know what to do with all its attacking talent. None of their last five Euro group games have had more than two goals. A one goal win, like a 1-0 England win, isn't the worst thing for Slovenia. They'd be kind of bubblicious depending on what the other two groups do the next couple of days. But you know, they definitely don't want to lose by two. So it's hard to imagine Slovenia ever really opening up unless they get down by a whole bunch of goals, in which case we're out anyway. So yeah, I like the under 2.5 at minus 110.
Excellent use of bubblicious, by the way, applied to a bubble at a sporting event. Were you a bubblicious or a bubble yum kind of guy as a kid?
I was an extra guy.
Extra.
My parents had the sugar free, so extra was the one in my house.
Really? Your parents were sugar free for you? Oh, my God. It's child abuse, for God's sakes.
Just for gum. Just for gum, to be clear. Not everything.
Okay. I didn't want to get your parents in trouble. Okay, and then nothing else today, right? We go to tomorrow, Portugal and Georgia.
Yeah. Yeah, so Portugal has already won the group and clinched, so they don't have anything to play for in that sense. But even Portugal's like second string, third string of attackers are way better than Georgia, two goals better, I think. And Portugal just doesn't have an off switch. You know, they can bring in like Diogo Jota, who started half the Premier League games for Liverpool this season. So they've got plenty of talent, and they outscored opponents 36-2 in qualifying, so they're not afraid to run up the score. If need be. So I just think they kind of roll through Georgia doing what Portugal does. Again, they don't have a reason to win, which is why you can get a plus 110 on Portugal laying a goal and a half. So there is that they're running against. And Georgia is still alive, but Portugal's just a lot better. They've got so much offensive talent that I like getting plus money on laying the goal and a half.
Who's winning this thing?
I mean, Germany's obviously the pick, I'm going to say. They didn't look great. I feel like it's very wide open. I kind of like Portugal, but also trusted in them and a Roberto Martinez team that, you know, has some questions defensively because they're an offense first. It's a little dangerous. I feel like Portugal's looked the best. Some people like Spain a lot. And the problem is all three of those are going to be on the same half of the bracket in all likelihood.
The England-Slovenia thing, though, today, I understand your reasoning, but like, shouldn't England try to win to avoid Germany in the next round? Is that part of it?
Yeah. Yeah. If they get the one seed, they will have a much better round of 16 to really hold path all the way to the final. In theory, than they would. They'd have France at some point beforehand, in all likelihood.
And the U.S.
They want to stay on the half.
U.S. and Copa America is exactly what you thought it is. We'll get to the quarters and then we'll get bounced. You still think that?
What it looks like. I mean, it was a very do what you have to do in the first game. They won 2-0, which like precisely met expectations. So they should beat Panama Thursday, and then you'll get through and run into a better teams. But you never know how it's going to fall. They got a shot.
Don't be anti-American, Paulie. Don't be that.
Right.
Oh, Paul Carr, everybody. Thank you, Paul. Appreciate it. Offner breaks back. Let's go. Coming back. Baseball next. Don't forget to check out our website, vsin.com. Best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state, betting tools, betting guides. It's all there on the front page today. Oh, this is good. Steve Mackinnon on the MLB bullpen betting system that he's got. Update, he's got an MLB bullpen betting system update yielding a massive week, it says. I'll actually dive into that after the show. Tennis predictions from our buddy Zach Cohen, who will join Drew and I for the Beating the Book tennis pod on Thursday. By the way, Sebastian Hoffner gets it done. If we can get Siniakova home, that would be great. Also on the website, though, a whole bunch of football stuff. Matt Eumanns on college hoops. And Zach actually looks ahead to the NBA championship odds next year. All of that at vsin.com. Check it out. So Wyatt Tomchek in for Kelly Bidlin. You okay, man? We haven't heard enough from you.
You know, You caught me not ready.
I'm sorry. Listen, Wyatt was working at his family's hardware store this past week.
Yes.
In
Wisconsin.
In Wisconsin. Yeah, where in Wisconsin?
Waukesha, Wisconsin, which is about 20 minutes to the west of Milwaukee.
Okay.
And then he has another one in Delavan, which is like on the Wisconsin-Illinois border.
Where did you grow up?
Right here in Vegas.
Oh, you grew up here.
Oh, yeah, born
and raised. That's right. So you are a UNLV. Wyatt, by the way, is not just some random guy that we picked up off the street. Wyatt does UNLV women's basketball play-by-play, right?
Yep, that is the big one, along with softball, volleyball, and men's and women's soccer.
You do it all.
I try to do it all. Try to stay
Dude,
busy.
So your aspiration is to be a big-time play-by-play guy.
Oh, yeah. Try to do it, you know, full-time. You know, it. I just enjoy it. I enjoy telling a story no matter where it is, and it's just been a lot of fun. You know, Gil, well, the thing that I really enjoy the most is when parents come up to me and go, hey, I'm so-and-so's daughter, son. I really enjoy listening to the games. You make it so much
fun
for
us. Oh, that's awesome.
I just love it. Like, at that level, I know my audience is it's very specific. People are tuning in for a reason.
Do you have a secret rivalry with Ben Wilson that we should know about?
Never. Well, he's a fellow Wisconsin. Well, I'm not a Wisconsinite, but he's a fellow Packer fan and Bucks fan. So we have a lot of love for each other.
Okay. Let's just try to sow rivalry there. Ben, nicest guy in the world. You, nicest guy in the world. May they both of you be spectacularly successful. And thanks for slumming with me this morning. I appreciate it.
Hey, you know.
No. Paul Sporer has been doing that for the better part of a decade, more than a decade with me, both in radio and podcast form. I've known him since he was, well, I don't know, what, 9 years old? It's Paul Sporer, everybody. At Sporer on Twitter. Works at FanGraphs. Sleeper in the Bus, the name of the podcast, comes to us courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. How you doing, Paulie?
I'm doing very well, Gil. Thanks for having me on.
Let's do this reverse. Let's start with DFS. Can I throw you that curveball? Have you taken a look? No, I haven't done any DFS.
Why did you do that to me?
I'm sorry.
You give me all these little ones to run down. No, I really haven't looked at the board. I was focused on all the ones
season
that we were going to run down today.
Okay, so let's do season long. So Paul has grabbed the DraftKings app, and he has grabbed it with both of his hands, and he's like, oh, there's stuff here. How many bets do you think you would recommend on today's show, Paul? What's coming up here in the next couple segments?
I mean, I've got a lot.
Okay.
I've got a lot of interest here on different things and of varying levels. You know, I'm always down to point out, like, hey, this one isn't crazy hot. This is more of a smaller move I would make. Otherwise, I'm going to be more aggressive on. So, and there's going to be a through line on a particular team that Ooh. I've just had a tough time quitting, and now they're starting to show some signs.
Okay. Well, let's. He's taking a swig from his thermos, so he's ready to go. I don't know what's in there. He won't tell
water.
Us. Water.
It's just water.
Sure. Water. Sure. All right. Start where you'd like to, and we'll go from there. What's your first one?
We'll go in the order that you listed them.
Okay.
That's the order I went in there, starting with the team futures there. And on the World Series, you know, there's a few teams I do like. In general, these are not my favorites to get that far ahead of it. I'm going to always be careful with this. But when I'm looking at it, you know, there's some teams that jump out on the favorites end. I still think Baltimore's a bit underpriced at plus 850. You know, they're fifth on the board. I think they're better than the fifth best team. I think they're probably around the second. I don't know that I have any team definitively, unquestionably better than Baltimore either. I also believe that they're firmly going to make a strong move for pitching. They just have too much talent. Not too much. You never have too much talent. But they have so much overflowing talent that they can make a move similar to the Burns one where it doesn't even really dent them. And that's not to say that DL Hall and Joey Ortiz are not two nice pieces that Milwaukee got. And we see what Milwaukee's doing with Ortiz. Hall's hurt right now. But I think the Orioles will make another big move. Plus 850, they're fifth on the board there. Then you start to get in a little bit of you know, the deeper cuts there. And I'm going to go with a Texas two-step. And I'm not a homer. I do live in Texas, but I'm a Tigers fan for those that don't know. But I like both Texas ball clubs right now, Houston at plus 2,200 and the Rangers at plus 7,500. Both teams have gone through some stuff this year and had some issues. And neither is, you know, firm ground right now. They're both sub 500. But I really like both those clubs. Only the Mariners recently kind of ran away from them a little bit, but none of the other teams, obviously the Angels and the A's, they're not going to do anything about it, take advantage of it. But even the rest of the American League didn't really take full advantage and bury these two ball clubs. And I really like where they stand, and I think both will be aggressive at the deadline as well. So Houston plus 2,200, Texas plus 7,500. I'm surprised they haven't changed. They've been hot of late, and that's the team that I'm going to be going with throughout. I like them for the league. For the American League, plus 3,500, and for the division, plus 750. I'm on Texas all the way. What they had to do was survive to about this point, and now they're adding pieces almost weekly, right? We just saw Scherzer come back. You know, they'll be adding pieces just from their injuries, let alone if they go out and make moves, which I would believe that they will. As the defending champs, they want to solidify that team. So even though they haven't looked great this year, I've had a hard time ever really quitting Texas. So that's where I'm at on that. Do you want to react to any of that or keep going?
Just making sure we understand. So for Texas, you're doing it throughout. You're doing division, league, and World Series. But for the
Correct.
Astros and the Orioles, you sticking only to World Series as good plays, you think?
And I like World Series for both of them. And then I don't mind the league on Houston. Now they're plus 1100 to Texas's plus 3500. So it's obviously much better to go on Texas there from a number standpoint of what you're getting. But I do like this Houston club too. I like both Texas teams. I understand if you don't want to stack on both there, and you know, you're going to have conflicting bets at some point, but if you don't have a dead lean to one or the other and you kind of want to spread it out a little bit, I think both clubs, they're just not ready to, I mean, Houston's not ready to be buried the way people want them to be buried.
Yeah.
And Texas, of course, is just kind of getting going. So I think that they sputtered a little bit out of the gate, which could have been expected with the injuries that they were suffering. And now as they add these pieces back, plus any moves they make, plus Wyatt Langford maybe starting to turn a corner. We'll see if they can get Evan Carter back healthy and going well. I like that Texas ball club quite a bit.
Yeah, I don't know if you know this, Paul, but I got Houston 25-1, most wins in June. I'm pumped. They're alive.
I love it.
They're alive. I love it. Let's get there.
Absolutely playing some good ball right now. Then as we continue on, so nothing else on the World Series. League in the NL, none of them jump out because a lot of them, those favorites are up there. They make sense. I get it. Those are probably the plays that you really want to focus on. But if I want to get a little bit wild with it, you know that dating back, what now, 3-4 years at this point, I can't quit this Padres team. They're such a talented bunch. They're frustrating as can be. And I know Tatis just got hurt, but they're playing better of late. I think Darvish is back today. They're also a team that has shown that they're not going to let this window close. You know, they got 5-6 more trades in the barrel with the White Sox. I'm sure of it. They can figure out a few more things to pillage from that ball club. I'm only partially joking. I wouldn't be surprised if they went back to them to try to get Eric Fetty and or Garrett Crochet. So I like that Padres team as a live underdog in the NL. And then for divisions, KC is interesting in the AL Central. I know that they've fallen on some hard times recently. I think they're out of the playoff picture for the first time since like April 5th or something around there. It's been a while, but they're still 42-37. They're a good ball club, plus 750. I think that's just going to be a really hard fought division. I respect what the Guardians are doing. I'm not off of them completely, but I think the Royals are going to push, excuse me. And then the Pirates. They're a big time dog, plus 3,000 right now, but they have two aces, Gil. And I know Jared Jones isn't pitching at his best right now, but I think that's more of just kind of rookie settling than him being figured out. In fact, he bounced back with a big gem against the Rockies recently. Against the Rays after getting hit by the Rockies in Colorado, which even though the Rockies stink this year, I'm never going to hold it too hard against the guy that gets beat up in Colorado. So they've got two aces. If they can figure out any hitting in Pittsburgh, I don't see any reason that they can't storm the castle and take down this Brewers club. A Brewers club I like too. So again, this isn't anti-Brewers so much as it is pro-Pirates. So that's where I'm at on the teams there. Like I said, add the Padres to the league with the two Texas teams. And then the division teams of interest are the Rangers, Royals, and then the Pirates as a super long shot.
All right. The Pirates to win the NL Central. Did they just take that down? No, there it is. Pirates to win the NL Central. Keep in mind, the Pirates are 8.5 back. They're 4 games below 500. Yep. They are 30-1 right now to win that division. And then some of your other bets we were talking about with the Rangers, we pointed out with the Rangers every which way. Rangers to win the American League West are plus 750. Astros, by the way, are an anemic plus 240. So you're not getting much of a number there. But with the Rangers...
They've been adjusted to. I'm surprised the Rangers haven't really been yet.
Yeah,
with their recent play.
Rangers to win the American League 35-1, and to win the whole dealio to be back-to-back champs. The Rangers are 75-1. Some of the numbers that we're talking about. That Pirates one is a very interesting call in what is a very fluid NL Central, with the Cardinals having a great month of baseball.
Absolutely.
And the team that I thought was going to be really good, the Cubs, kind of floundering, kind of just meh at this point. Paul's got a lot more season-long baseball thoughts beyond the markets we just discussed. That's on the other side. It's a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network. At Maracanada, the barrage in Spanish, right here at the D, downtown Las Vegas. Gil Alexander and Wyatt Tomchak. Don't forget, release day, NFL Guide release day, Thursday. Sign up now, vsin.com/subscribe. We're pumped. We're pumped for this. We are, I don't know, what would you say, this is 20 feet away, 25 feet away from a Sigma Derby machine here at the D. And there are five people gathered around, and this one lady was just going ballistic, hoping number three would get there. And we were waiting, Wyatt and I, for the result of this. And the only way, because we had our headphones on, we didn't know what happened. But the only way we know is that she went. So I guess she lost. Doggone it.
Have you ever played it before?
Hell no.
No?
Oh, you?
Okay. No. I mean,
it's fun for the whole family, I'm told. Yeah. We Kelly has a story, though, when he saw them cleaning the insides, the innards of the Sigma Derby machine. And Kelly wanted to take a photo of it. And the guy who was cleaning it was like, oh, no, you can't take a photo. Oh,
really?
Oh, yeah. It's like a big thing.
Because that's the story is that this is the only one left in the state of Nevada, right?
I think the only of the originals.
Of the originals?
Yes.
Okay,
there's a whole bunch of, you know, knockoff later generation ones. But of the originals, I think that's the only one. Oh, I want to say Fortenbaugh. Joe Fortenbaugh might have purchased one of the originals. It has it as his, I think, I don't know if it's true. I have to ask him. Does he have one at his house? Like, I'm sure his wife is like, Joe, can you move the Sigma Derby machine out of here? We have kids.
Oh, I would love to come over to the house. What are you doing? I'm playing Sigma Derby.
Playing Sigma Derby. Paul Spohr, kind enough to join us for a second segment. Okay, good flavor there for all of your team bets. Again, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line, he comes to us. You liked a lot of the player stuff as well.
Yeah, I got some player stuff that is of note. And, you know, I love doing this. We talk about these every year, really, that we've been doing stuff. And the evolution of the awards over the season is always fascinating, right? We start talking about MVP and Cy Young in April, which, let's be honest, is kind of stupid.
Yeah.
But it's fun, right? It's why we enjoy sports. Like, oh, my God, what if this guy with this hot April ends up being the guy? And we know a lot of it's narrative-driven, too. Maybe it shouldn't be as much. Like, you know, some of the April-May stuff can be forgotten for a great story down the stretch. But I got some guys of note here, and we'll start with the MVP. And I like a couple of the longer shot guys here. And one of my favorites is on the O's with Adley Rutschman. And, you know, that's a guy that, like, is team leader through and through, calling him a switch-hitting posy since he's come up. Like, the second, honestly, even before that, at Oregon State, I was like, oh, this guy is just, like, switch-hitting posy, has everything, you know, doesn't have a super, super standout skill when it comes to his offense, like, one thing that carries him, just does everything very well. Great catcher, team leader. The narrative is there. The Orioles, they're on the rise. The stats are there, too. You need the stats to go with it. But everything's going well for Adley Rutschman. I think he could have a huge summer, put himself in that MVP candidacy. I like him at 80 to 1. Similarly, though, Jordan Alvarez, you know, another great player. Now, it's a little bit tougher for him as essentially a DH, but he is such an amazing hitter. I mean, this guy has, you know, 15 homers in his back pocket any given month. Right. When he's dialed in, you're not going to be surprised if he's dropping double digit homers. So I think Alvarez at 80 to 1 as well is interesting for the MVP. So those are my two MVPs. Again, do you want me to go through them all or stop?
You know, I was just going to say, Paul said he meant Jordan Alvarez. It sort of sounded like Jordan Alvarez. Some people are
I said
like,
Jordan. I'm sorry. That is actually how it's pronounced. But I know everyone calls him Jordan. I will go with that.
I just didn't want people to be confused.
That's fair. Yeah. That's fair. But his actual name is Jordan. Just so we're clear, but
he let
everyone call him Jordan. But anyway, that is who I'm talking about. And they're both at 80 to 1 there, Adley and Alvarez. Actually, I'm not seeing Adley on the board that's being listed there, but
Adley's 80 to 1. He's right there, below Jordan. Yep.
Oh, yeah, right there. Sorry. Okay, so now going to the Cy Young, I got a few candidates I like, two in the NL, one in the American League. And again, I think this is even more wide open than the MVP stuff. You can really turn your Cy Young candidacy with like an amazing month because it can be so high impact with 5-6 starts, and it can really kind of pivot you. And I think one team that you kind of casually mentioned coming out of the or going into the break last time was the Cardinals. Their ace is back and looking amazing. Sonny Gray missed some time at the beginning of the year, but he has not missed a beat since returning. 281 ERA, 095 whip. Just an excellent pitcher. You know, reached 32 starts last year. Will fall a bit short of that this year because of some of the time missed. But we know that you don't have to be putting up big 200-plus inning type seasons anymore. If you've got the skills in 180-something innings, that can get it done. He's interesting at 16 to 1. A little bit deeper, though. Aaron Nola, 35 to 1. I know Zach Wheeler gets more of the headlines over there, and I totally get it. He is the true ace, and you know, Nola is kind of his Robin. But sometimes Robin gets a Cy Young, and I wouldn't be surprised if he goes on a run. Now, we know he can have these blow-up starts. What Nola's going to have to do over the summer is avoid those dotted, you know, 6 earned run, 7 earned run disasters that seem to always mix in over the course of his seasons, once every 10 starts, but it can erase 3 or 4 goodies. He just got clobbered in Boston recently for 8 earnings. That's got to be the last one of those for Nola to do it, but he's got the skills. He's got the talent. He's got the reputation as being a great starter as well. And then in the American League, my guy was the guy I picked coming into the year, I'm sticking with him. It's another Seattle guy. I was on the Luis Castillo train last year. This year, I've pivoted to George Kirby, and I realize that he's a bit behind Logan Gilbert right now. And I think they're both very similar, but I'm just going to take the guy at a better price because I think Kirby's every bit as good as Gilbert. I love Gilbert as well, but I think Kirby's best pitching could be ahead of him, and he could make a big run, especially if Seattle ends up winning that AL West. So those are my Cy Youngs, Sonny Gray, Aaron Nola, and George Kirby at 50-1.
Paul, I have a question for you. Obviously, the most fascinating pitcher in all of baseball is Paul Skenes. Correct. Is there a chance that he can win the NL Cy Young, or do you think that they're just going to give him the NL Rookie of the Year?
They will probably give him the Rookie of the Year to kind of satiate, giving him the Cy Young. But there is a world where he just kind of deserves it. And if they really don't put any major restrictions on him, and I'm not sure that they should. If they're contending, if they can actually get themselves back into full contention where pushing Paul Skenes out there 6-7 innings past maybe a limit that they had originally wanted in the sake of chasing playoffs would make sense, then yes, I think he could push all the way into it. It will be tough, and they will have the Rookie of the Year to kind of give him something, and we've seen that before, but I don't rule it out, and he is interesting. He's too short of a shot for Rookie of the Year, but if you really want to get in on some Skenes action, I think that's where you would go is jump into the Cy Young pool and see if you can get a little decent number there and just hope that they don't shut him down at all.
Also, check on whether Robin from Batman and Robin ever won a Cy Young, because I'm pretty sure Paul said he did. I'm pretty sure that's
what
happened.
I think he did.
Was that it for the awards, or was that anything else you wanted to know? That's it?
No, I got more. How much time I got?
You got 3 minutes. You got time. Go ahead.
All right. So Rookie of the Year, I mentioned Paul Skenes. So you're going super long shots the rest of the way here. But there is a world where they shut him down, overly quick, and they play it too tight on him, or they just completely fall out of contention, so they want to shut him down and open up the door. It's possible. Again, Skenes is the favorite. We're going quarter unit, half unit type stuff here. But I like Mason Winn, a little bit more St. Louis love here with some awards. Mason Winn is awesome. True legit shortstop, meaning he can pick it, play the defense brilliantly. Some of his throws are unbelievable, but also having a good hitting season so far. 298, 341, 433 on the slash line, 4 homers, 8 steals. So, throws in some of the fantasy categories, if you will, which do play in MVP votes. So if he can put up a nice double-double, which is at least 10 homers and steals with a great 300 or so batting average and a ton of war from defense and base running, if Skenes opens the door, I think somebody like Mason Winn could sneak in. But then in the American League, as more of a legitimate bet as opposed to a long shot bet, I like David Hamilton. Now, a little bit of bias. He's a Longhorn. I'm a Longhorn myself. And I love Luis Gil. He, too, would have to kind of open the door. So I guess it is a little bit more long shotty than I originally said there. But I love what David Hamilton's doing. And, the Red Sox are in this right now. They're 42-36. David Hamilton could be a big part of any sort of playoff run that they might make. He's playing some decent enough defense to stick it short. He's been a stolen base god with 21 on 22 attempts, hitting .282, and has a little bit of punch, already 5 homers in 54 games. So David Hamilton at 25-1 for the AL Rookie of the Year is very interesting. Do you have any thoughts on those two rookies of the year?
No, I'm just going to say Mason Winn also 25-1 and David Hamilton 25-1 in their respective award categories. Yes. 90 seconds. You got more.
All right. Juan Soto, over 35.5 homers. I just love Juan Soto. He's a god. Luis Gil, over 172.5 strikeouts. They said that they're not going to limit him. And so if they're not going to limit him and let him pitch all year, there's a great shot for him to get that. Now, that is the short shot to bet the over, but I do like him, and I love everything Luis Gil is doing. Home run leader, long shot, Juan Soto, 80-1. Again, I just love Juan Soto. I think he's a god. Number one seed, Baltimore Orioles, plus like 310 or something. It's not a great number, but I'm looking for something of a long shot there outside of like the Dodgers, and I forget who the AL top dog was. The Yankees, obviously. And then World Series division winner, AL West. I like the two Texas teams and Seattle. If they can get at least two teams in, I like my chances there.
Orioles plus 310 to be the number one seed.
Correct.
By the way, DraftKings only has the number one seed listed right now, but oftentimes they will pop up different seeds like 2 through 6. Oftentimes 4, 5, 6 can provide a lot of great betting value.
Yes.
Yeah, that would be much more fun. It could also get you messed up because I know Will Hill and I were talking about the Mets the other day, and he was like, should I take the Mets number 6 seed? And I was like, yeah, just take it to make the playoffs, because if they end up 4 or 5, you'll get like super
upset
at yourself. Yeah. So, but they are interesting markets as well. Paul, well done. 2 solid segments of bets. My man, appreciate it.
Thanks. Thanks so much for having me on. I'll talk to y'all next week.
You too. Paul Sporer, @Sporer on Twitter. We've done all we can do. Enjoy from VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.